Welcome to Women Got Game, where we uncover untold stories of extraordinary women in sports across Northwest Ohio and beyond. I'm Sophia Fisher, and we're going to celebrate the evolution of female athletes, coaches, and sports enthusiasts. Let's dive into a world often overlooked in the broader sports narrative. Ready to explore? Let's play. There's been a remarkable surge in participation and talent within women's college golf. It's reshaping the landscape of sport. As opportunities expand, more young women are embracing golf in high school with dreams of securing the coveted college scholarships. This influx of talent has elevated the competitiveness of tournaments, bolstering individual college programs, and setting new standards in women's golf. The collegiate level stands as a pivotal development point for those aspiring to hone their skills necessary for a professional career in the LPGA. So join us as we explore the dynamic world of women's golf, where every swing is a testament to perseverance, passion, and the pursuit of excellence. All right, in today's episode, we have the honor of sitting down with Jenny Coluccio, the women's head golf coach at the University of Toledo. Together, we'll unravel the intricacies of women's golf and delve into the path to success in this fiercely competitive sport. Hey, Jenny, welcome.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off by talking about what inspired you to become a D1 collegiate women's golf coach, and tell us about your background and the path that led you to women's golf.
Well, I probably have a unique path compared to my own players of playing Division I and some other, a fair number of coaches that are at this level too. Golf was not on my radar as a kid, not at all. I was fortunate to be a country club kid. So we did junior golf, you know, once a week in the summers, and that was it. Great. Yay. I have two older brothers, so there's a lot of competition going on in the family just in general, but my father was a very good player. He played at the College of Worcester, so here in Ohio. I'm from southern Missouri, though. So, and he grew up with Payne Stewart, and they played a lot of golf and summer golf and competitive golf, everything else. So it's in my dad's side of the family. But when my brothers kind of didn't take to it as much, like from a competitive standpoint, he kind of gave up the dream a little bit that one of his kids was going to take up the sport. But anyway, so I played volleyball. It was my main sport. Loved it. I played softball as well. And then I got injured playing my eighth grade and freshman year of high school, playing volleyball and everything else in the knees. So I had a conversation more with my mom than anything else. And she's like, why don't you play golf? Because when I played it in the summer, I was decently good at it. I kind of came by it naturally, but I was like, you know, it's a thing. So I'm like, sure, why not? Let's give it a try. It's probably the best day of my dad's life that one of his kids decided to play high school golf, at least. So that the journey and everything else with that, as you might imagine, I improved pretty quickly. I got addicted to it in a competitive way. My dad took me along with it in a very healthy way too. We have a great relationship when it comes to golf and competitive and teaching and all that kind of stuff. It was probably a good buffer from our relationship that my brothers didn't play and it was me. So that part of the pressure was off. But anyway, so then I looked to potentially play it in college. Because of my short spans of competitive golf from a recruiting aspect, I really didn't get recruited very much. I spent my freshman year at Rhodes College in Memphis, so I played Division III there. And we had a good team and a decent experience, some other life events, so I transferred back to Drury University, which is in my hometown of Springfield, Missouri. The coach there at the time, I played a lot of golf with her in the summer. She really, really wanted me to come my freshman year, and I said, I need to get out of my hometown. So lo and behold, I ate my words and I came home, played at Drury University. We had a really competitive team. First graduating class of the program, we went to the national championship twice. We won regional championships. We won conference championships. It was just really kind of this perfect storm of a lot of people coming together. And she was another big mentor for me. She's kind of my golf mom. I still have a great relationship with her. It was getting to the end of my college career, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life, like most of my players now. But so she kind of mentored me through it. I went to Q school, so I went to qualifying school after college. I felt like I would regret not doing it, something that my dad regretted not doing. So I said, I'll give it a shot and everything else. And kind of realized that that life wasn't necessarily for me. Team golf was where I really, really loved. Playing for myself didn't matter as much for me as it did for playing for a team. So then I went back and I was a volunteer for my coach that later spring semester after I graduated that next year. And then I got into trying to find a GA position to become an assistant coach. The Division II world is really small, so trying to get into Division I and stuff like that, like it's pretty difficult to work through that. Anyway, so I became a graduate assistant at Dakota Wesleyan University in Mitchell, South Dakota, home of the Corn Palace, if yes. You didn't know that.
Nice, I like it.
I experienced true winter for the first time being up there, and true summer. It gets anywhere from 60 to below to 100 degrees out there. Had a great experience going through that, being a grad assistant. Halfway through my second year, I kind of got recruited by the school down the road, University of Sioux Falls, because their coach was going to step down. He's a bit of a legend. Not a bit. He is a legend in that athletic department at University of Sioux Falls. And we had played against them. They were in our conference, but they were moving up to Division II. So NAIA was where I was. And I became the head coach then, right away. I finished out the semester, that second semester, with University of Sioux Falls. So it's one of those where you jump on the next opportunity. Like, you have to be able to jump and move, especially in the coaching industry. And I was at University of Sioux Falls for 3.5 years, but coaching both men and women at both of those places. Some of the greatest years of coaching, there's so much learning. My, at the time, fiance, now husband, was my assistant coach, or voluntold assistant coach, trying to manage two different teams, boys and girls and everything else, and just a really great foundation for me in coaching. The relationship aspect, everything else. And then a unique opportunity for me came to interview at University of Illinois for the assistant coach position. A lot of college athletics is not just who you know, but who knows you, and making those connections in the web. So I was lucky enough to be able to go and interview for that position and then receive the offer for it. And I coached underneath Renee Sloan for 5 years. She's a legend herself as a player. She's been at Illinois for, 17, 18 years now, close, as a head coach. And it was my first taste at big-time Division I Power 5 program. And Illinois is known for one of its best practice facilities in the country and everything else. Great support. The men's program is kind of a dynasty as well. And so we built the program from somewhere in the 130 rankings to 22nd, I think, whenever I left, in 5-year cycle. So, I mean, that's Renee's one of the hardest workers that I learned from in college golf as coaches, and just who she is as a person. Learned a lot about managing the program there at the Division I level, because it's a business at the Power 5. It is very much a business. But you can't get lost in the business. You have to remember that you're there to coach. So learning how to balance that out as an assistant was really beneficial for me. And then the opportunity to move on to Toledo came up. Kind of a unique situation at Toledo with the departure of the former coach and how all of that worked and everything. But we came up here. My husband came with me. At the time, we have two young boys. One was, I think, 4 months old whenever we came to interview. And we really enjoyed Toledo. It was surprisingly to us my mom's from Ohio originally, over on the east side of Cleveland. Toledo doesn't necessarily have the best reputation.
So unfair.
Right? It's unfair. Yes, it really
it's
is.
It's one of the best kept secrets.
It is.
In the United States,
and
my
part of you wants to keep it a secret, and the other part of you wants to not keep it a secret. So, but we fell in love with Toledo and really the people of the university, high quality individuals that work in the athletic department. And that really was a big part of it for me of like, who am I going to be working with day to day and who's going to be helping me build this program from the nuts and bolts. And so Toledo was the next move and here I am. It's really interesting. Morgan Wallen has this song of seven summers ago.
Yes.
Right. And when that song came out, my husband asked me, he's like, think about what you were doing seven summers ago. We were at University of Sioux Falls, and the president of the university at the time, who was my direct boss, just how everything worked, he said, where do you want to be in 7 years? I said, I want to be a Division I college golf coach. And so I'm like, I hadn't even thought about it.
You yeah. manifested it.
Hadn't even thought about it. So, I mean, there you go with where you're going and where you want to go and, you know.
And how it happens, right?
How it happens is just, it's really kind of cool how it all worked out. Mm.
So I really like, you know, something you said about, you know, really looking at, you know, you can relate to the players. Obviously, you know, you were an athlete yourself and a golfer specifically. But as a coach now, and again, you said it is a big business. It's a huge business, more than it's ever been. But I want to get to what do you, when you're coaching, recruiting, what kind of skills and qualities are you looking for in a woman's golfer? Can you tell us about that?
So from the nuts and bolts side of it, right, there's a certain scoring range that we look for, right? Part of that goes into what are the opportunities that that person has to play in events. We get that you've got siblings and you've got other things. It's a financial commitment, and sometimes your family is capped out, right? So we try to look at what tournaments do you play in, what opportunities do you seek out, and then what's that scoring average? So a lot of times we look from 74 to 76 for our highest scholarship athletes is from the youth side of things. And then as it goes, really, like for me, I try to look at that potential trajectory. So how do you get to those numbers? Like that's the evaluation piece, right? Going out and watching, what's your speed look like? You know, how fast do you swing it? If you don't swing it very fast, how do you use what you have? So how do those numbers get put together? So there's a kind of unique evaluation process from the golf side of things. Characteristics-wise, competitor. Like you've got to want to wake up and want it. I can't drag you along. So as good as you can be, you can ride talent, but if you're not willing to work for it whenever you get in college, like you become more independent. And practice isn't always exactly what you want it to be when you want it to be. So if you need extra stuff, you got to carve out that time and want it. So that competitor piece is very important. Outside of that, like you got to be open-minded enough and coachable. We're considered the gentleman's sport, right? So etiquette is part of it, like gratitude. How well do you treat the people around you matters. So, you know, as you're trying to network and learn and you got to be a good teammate, golf is unique. You don't play as a teammate necessarily in high school in the youth program. You play as a teammate in college very much so. It matters. Like, that's why we were so successful this year at the MAC championship. That team part was part of that chemistry. And then, you know, after college, that team part is gone. So it's this really unique part. If you don't know how to be a teammate, then there's a question mark there of how you're going to be whenever you come in the program. So that's kind of the, I guess, snapshot in a way of what we try to look for and start our pseudo funnel of looking at athletes as they come in and out. Mm-hmm.
What about the scholarship piece since you're really considered a non-revenue generating sport in D1? And maybe that's not true across the country. Maybe there's other programs. But I know for a fact, obviously, you know, it is a challenge for universities with budgets and constraints there. Are you given X amount of full rides? How does that look?
So we're fortunate at Toledo to be a fully funded NCAA program. What that means for college golf, Division I, for women, is that we have 6 full scholarships. And again, the way Toledo structures it is that we can split those up however we like. So we can kind of create our different aid packages per athlete. A lot of that depends on who's coming in, who's going out, and who brings what academics as well, and their, you know, abilities to kind of package things together. But not every program's that way, not every Division I program's that way. But we are fully funded at the 6 full scholarships. Men's college golf is very different. They're full funded is 4.5. So there's Title IX working in the favor of women's golf. And as much as we want to be a revenue sport, we are not. So we have our own ways from a budgeting standpoint of trying to make up those things. But we're fortunate that we're we're well supported by the university.
Sure, that's excellent. And you know, I have knowledge of Title IX and have held a position in the past in women's athletics specifically. So it's great to hear, because there's still a lot of colleges and universities who are very far away from Title IX compliance. So I think that speaks attests to a lot to the Mid-American Conference. We talk a lot about mid-majors. How are we equally yoked and whatnot? So it's fantastic to hear that. Let's talk about explaining the day-to-day life. If you're a student athlete, how difficult is it for them? Because, you know, you're going out, are you playing nine holes three times a week? Are you going 18? Tell me about that, because it seems like golf takes a long time to play. They got class, they got all the other things.
It does, it does. You know, golf is probably the only sport that we can't really practice how we play, because it takes so long. So NCAA caps us at 20 hours of countable per week in season. So, I mean, what makes up those 20 hours? So normal week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we work out 1 hour each of those days. So there's 3 hours of that 20 hours gone. And our practices are anywhere from 2 to 4 hours a day. It depends. Class schedules and everything else we got to work around. You can't miss class for practice. We certainly miss class for competition.
Sure.
But so that normal week is, you know, you're working out three times a week. You got practice 6 out of the 7 days, most likely. And those practices are anywhere from 2 to 4 hours a piece.
That's a commitment.
Yeah, that's a lot. It is a commitment. And then there's that work on top of it. Again, if that player, you know, wants the extra work and things like that, it's not held against them if they don't. But it's certainly one of those things, like you want to get to the next level. You want to push things, then it takes the other bits. But and you've got some media things on top of that. You've got class. You've got study hall hours for, you know, our younger ones on the program. They get to earn their way out of it. But you got study hall hours and other academic responsibilities that you have to manage. So in a lot of ways of being a student athlete, like you're almost a full-time job while you're a student in college. So there's some things that they miss out on. But there's also some things that they experience that regular students don't.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and they want to improve their handicap, right? You're constantly looking at, probably for D1 golf specifically. Mm-hmm. And also, I guess, just to tell the audience, in case they're not familiar with college golf, how do you score college golf when we're going out as a team? Because you said it's really a team sport, not so much individual.
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of people are like, wait, how does this work? So we play five. And we don't play together, so we play with other teams. So I've got them scattered about the acreage as they're on the golf course. But we play five players each round. We cannot substitute until the postseason, and even then you have to wait until the in-between rounds. You can't do it during a round. But all five
There's no
play.
Subs.
No
like
subs.
In basketball.
Nope. You can't call timeout. You can't do anything like that. No subs. But we play five, and you count the low four scores as our team score. So if everybody shoots 75, it's a smooth 300 as a team. You know, we're looking for lower than that, hopefully, every time. But yeah, so it's interesting. You know, everybody, you know, one player can be doing this over here on their game is going really well. Another player is having a bad day. And it's like, coach, I didn't see you all day. I was like, well, I was helping so-and-so most of the day. I knew you were doing all right, so I left you by yourself, you know, or whatever else. So there's a lot of teamness, but there's also a lot of independence that comes with playing. So, and every player is very different.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So there's that significance of the team competition mm-hmm. that you were referencing early on.
Absolutely.
And saying mm-hmm. that they need to be a team player, but then also it does differ from individual play and being able to have them be able to focus if you're not there, you know, helping them.
You
got to
problem
time.
Solve. Yeah. You got to problem solve on your own sometimes. You know, we go through that. This year was unique because we actually graduated 6 players of our 9 roster this year. So we had a very veteran squad. So a lot of times you're like, coach, I didn't see you much. I'm like, you didn't need to see me. Like, you know how to problem solve. You're good. Get to be a cheerleader a little bit more. You know, next year's going to be more work on my end because we got new ones coming in. But now the team aspect is a big part of it. Like, I don't know, you're on a basketball court and you can feel that energy from player to player because you're all right there and you've got to connect and it's fast paced. Yeah. You have to communicate and everything else. You need the other person in order to execute your job. In golf, you don't need the other person to execute your job, but you need the connection so that when you're on doing something and you can grind deep to know that you're going to play for somebody else as well, and know that you don't know what's happening necessarily, but you need to pull through as much as you can for that person. So, you know, come to the end and it's kind of a surprise of what everybody else shot that day. Like, you don't know what your teammates are necessarily doing. So.
Until the end, right?
Until the end, yeah.
So let's talk about some of the top women's golf programs in the country and what makes them stand out. Obviously, you're a mid-major. You're doing awesome here. So I'm just going to give us a kudo for University of Toledo. But obviously, your finger's on the pulse.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Stanford is the one that kind of leads the way in a lot of ways. I think right now at the regional championship, they've got a massive lead. But anyway, so there's a lot there. I think when it comes to golf and the difference of programs, you have mid-majors that can be successful against the Power Five. It's a matter of comes down of concocting the right recruits for you in those areas and having the right support and being able to build the schedule. The nice thing about golf is that I don't have to play a max schedule. I can play anywhere I want in the country as long as I can get into those tournaments. So there's a lot of coaching networking that happens to try to work your way into certain tournaments and then build your ranking from there.
Is it budgetary too? Does it cost?
Absolutely.
So that could be a constraint, correct?
Absolutely, yep. So, I mean, it costs a lot to fly out to Arizona and California to play in some of those big events.
So and it's multiple days, right? It's multiple days.
Absolutely. So. When we go to a tournament, we're gone anywhere from 4 to 5 days. Yeah. So, you know, a basketball game, to put it in private, you can drive over the day, play, and drive over the night, you know, and there's a game. But so anytime we're gone, a minimum of 3 days is where we're gone, and a maximum of anywhere from 5 to 6, depending upon the tournament.
And so, weather matters, right?
So. Weather matters. And you know what? You can't control Mother Nature.
Yes.
Because we tried to go south to Missouri this year, and it's the coldest experience that my players have ever felt in their entire careers. So, you know, I mean, it's outdoor sport. So we got to be prepared for anything at any time. But as you said, so some of the best programs in the country, a lot of it will come down to facilities, too, from a recruiting aspect and being able to develop your players. You know, we've got some good facilities here. Inverness is our home course. Certainly a selling
tool.
Beautiful.
That's pretty cool.
Beautiful. Tough golf course.
I golfed it once.
Yeah.
We won't talk about it here.
Cool, man. You know, you put the Solheim Cup, the U.S. Women's Open, and the AM on that golf course, and, you know, they struggle with it, and it just puts it in perspective. That's a big thing we talk about with the team. Like, if you can put your ball in the hole at Inverness, you can play anywhere. So
there you go.
Let's go, ladies.
There you go.
But yeah, so it comes down to some of the facilities, some of the access. Practice indoor facilities matter for us because we're indoors in the winter. So that's something that can kind of separate us a little bit with access to it. But some of these big programs, like a lot of it comes from the big media money that comes from, you know, now the Big Ten owns all the media markets, right, from East Coast to West Coast and everything else. But uniquely said, women's golf is an international sport. And a lot of players are looking for opportunities from, you know, to come to the U.S. to play the sport. And I think that when you get the right people in the right places, like a mid-major can be successful in women's golf. We don't have to be a Power Five. You can create your own opportunities to make it to those levels and not have to be stonewalled a bit by schedule. You know, I feel really bad for Trisha. As, you know, over the past 16 years, she's had some amazing teams that have gotten snubbed by, you know, automatic bids because of the schedule. Well, her hands are tied. You know, now Ginny gets to take that on as in her new role as the coach of the women's basketball team. But we don't quite have our handcuffs like that. You know, we got to work our schedule and get into things and everything else. So, you know, we're fortunate that I've been able to kind of work the schedule a little bit to play more Power Five schools and make it that way. So we just got to play well at the right time to kind of continue to boost our ranking.
Sure. And talking about, you know, you're referencing University of Toledo women's basketball team. They've had a legacy for many, many years, you know, with other coaches, you know, Mark Elon, Bill Fennelly, and you know, obviously Trisha Cullip continuing that success. However, I was fascinated to really look at the international landscape from a collegiate perspective for women's golf and looking at all of the athletes coming out of collegiate level, trying to go LPGA, you know, very similar to women's basketball going to WNBA, but the WNBA, they just don't have enough spots.
No.
Whereas for women's golf, I think there was a really extreme opportunity, you know, beyond just even the States or even internationally, to be able to play at a higher level, but still, I know it has its constraints. Mm-hmm. So with that, I do want to talk about how do you transition? We talk about, for me, okay, I have some great big Berthas. They're custom. I think I have the, you know, state-of-the-art golf balls that have this particular, you know, technology that's, you know, more forgiving. And boy, do I have some great looking golf outfits. But I think when it comes down to it, mental toughness. How much of the game is mental when you have all these opportunities? You have, you know, these, again, Inverness, the challenging golf courses. Tell us about really at the end of the day, mental toughness. If you're not there with them and you're on a, you're out and outing, yeah, and they're not seeing coach, how do you train for that?
How do you train for that? Well,
because I feel it's more mental.
You make practice really hard. You make practice really hard. So one of the things I tell my players is expect the unexpected. So, and that means at practice as well. Like, you don't know what's coming to you whenever you come to practice. We could be doing something, you know, that's smooth and moving through things and kind of refining a few skills, or we can do something that just boggles your mind and is meant to make you fail that day. And learning how to deal with failure is important because golf, you're going to fail way more than you're going to be successful. The sport is just built that way. You know, Tiger Woods at his best didn't have a winning percentage. And so, I mean, he still didn't, you know, through his career. So I think with golf, if you can frame success differently, it helps that mental toughness, as well as knowing that, like, if you didn't do it this time, it doesn't mean you're not going to do it in the future. So we train a lot of that through practice. We have a lot of conversations and just how your perspective coming into that sport and into the moment, as well as, you know, really it's controlling your body. So it's that emotional control as you go throughout. Course management, I can teach to just about anybody, but if they're not willing to control themselves, then we're going to have problems with them ebbing and flowing throughout a round. We tell players and athletes, it's like emotions aren't a bad thing either. They can be really great as long as you are in control of how that reaction is helping you, as opposed to how those emotions are tearing you down or running you out of control and not able to make those clear decisions in the future. So we try to structure practice in different ways that really push them emotionally. And then we have the conversations after them of like, okay, you got frustrated today. Here's why we did that. So we can work through it because you're going to get frustrated on that golf course. We're human. It's going to happen. So learning to work through those problems on a day-to-day thing, then, you know, when you get into tournaments and you have those moments, it's like, well, we've worked through this. Right? How did we work through this? How do I need to work through this in order to reset myself to move forward? I'll take what I need and move on.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about in reaching NCAA play or if you're going to MAC tournaments and whatnot. Do you notice that the athletes, I mean, there's great golf championships also, like the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It helps with growth and development because you're playing at a higher level. But at the collegiate, you know, level, when you're in a tournament, do you feel that the players rise to that occasion? Is because it's tournament time? Is there more pressure from an individual standpoint? What's happening there at that time? Because you've had a season, a long season, you reach that. What are you saying to the players at that time?
So, like for us this year at the MAC Championship, I took a big step back because at that point in time, we're either ready or we aren't in a lot of ways, especially with our veteran squad. So giving them the space and supporting them of their belief of like, hey, go out and do what you do. That's all you got to do. Go out and try your best and how it is in your competitive moments. We have some players that really thrive under that, you know, pressure that gets put onto them. They love the adrenaline. I have one of our girls, Amelia Lee. She was a fifth year this year. So out of my 6 years here at Toledo, she's been here for five of them. She's an adrenaline junkie in a way of, you know, she thrives in that. And she goes still. She kind of goes quiet. And she just gets into the stealthy competitor mode. But it's that adrenaline piece that just picks you up. So in golf, too, like it's a different kind of adrenaline than you get as, you know, in your arena or from a soccer player or, you know, a different sport. But so you have those players that are the adrenaline junkies that kind of step up to the plate like, yes, let's do this. And then you have your other ones that you kind of have to coach up and move through, like bring it down a level, right? They need to be this cool, calm, collected, like I don't say pressure's off, but just they need that belief underneath them and then let them ride. And let them go. Like, they're not going to be these ones that you see make these huge reactions and then move and ride the wave and everything else. They're like, thanks, made par, gonna move on. Sure. Or, you know, like, sure. Yep, tap that one in for birdie and we're gonna move on.
They have the different personalities and the way they approach the game. So that leads me to the next question. And recent changes with NC2A with in regards to name, image, and likeness. We're talking about athletes that have their own brand, and that's something that obviously has impacted D1 sports and obviously all the way through D3. But how do you see this impacting female collegiate players? What do you think about the ability to profit from these NIL deals for women's golf and the landscape around it?
You know, it's interesting that you talk about how the brand, the word brand, especially with student athletes, has really become, what's the word for it, has really become important to talk about. The interesting thing to me is that from the beginning of my coaching career, we've talked about your brand and your personal brand. Like you're not just representing yourself anymore. You're representing the team, the university, your family. So, and that's more from a character aspect of how are we going to act? How are we going to present ourselves as a team? So I don't think that that's necessarily new. I think there's a new branch of it. And I think it's a good, you know, opportunity for them to capitalize. Yeah, I mean, we're a capitalist society in a lot of ways, right? Sure. You know, golf is a revenue sport. It's a recreational sport. It's not revenue sport in college golf, but it's a very tangible sport for a lot of people and relatable sport.
And don't you think because it's more of an individualized sport and always has been,
it's really a lot easier to do that with.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
Versus a different sport.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, you know, a sport that you know, again, your job relates on somebody else doing their job well, you know, then you can be really elevated as a great player. At golf, you don't necessarily need somebody else for that. So, and whether you're a great player or you're not, either too, like if marketing is what you want to do or if this thing is you're really unique, you provide this to the team. Like, I don't know. I think if you look at it in a creative way, it's an avenue for them to set up a foundation of, you know, to set them financially up in a way of whether it's networking or jobs or actual financial foundation. And a lot of it is what you're going to make of it.
Sure.
You know, we talk about that from just a collegiate experience. A lot of it is what you make of it and your perspective. You know, you're going to have days where you hate your coach. My players have hated me some days, right? Like, so I know that. Sometimes I do it on purpose. But, you know, it's a lot of what you make it to be.
Sure.
And I think there's a lot of opportunities out there. And some athletes have caught on to it quickly. And some are still trying to wrap their heads around, how could that work for me? So, again, I think it comes down to the individual and how much they want to seize that opportunity.
Yeah, I'm interested. I like the golf angle just because individual brands, I mean, that's really what you're doing. I don't care what sport you're looking at, women's basketball, softball, women's volleyball, doesn't matter. We're trying to create a branding, marketing opportunity for them to stand out, but also to generate income that makes sense, but also from a perspective of really authentically representing who they are.
That's a huge word. That is a huge word, the authenticity. People see right through that too. Like, so if you're going to go after something that is not authentically you, like, it's going to be short-lived, or you're going to have to work yourself out of it anyways. So we try to talk about that a lot. Like, what authentically do you believe in? And what, you know, they laugh about all these videos on TikTok and everything else, and they kind of cringe about, you know, people that are more my age that are on it and everything else. I'm like, hey, ladies, they're putting themselves out there, and it's catching on because they are being authentic.
Sure.
Like, that's what's going to get it the most. It's if you're not going to be able to do something that is authentic to you, don't do it.
Is NIL affecting your recruitment at all?
Not fully yet. Again, I think it's a little bit different at our level compared to what Kowalczyk and Jenny are going to see and Candle as they bring in players in and out and those opportunities. It's certainly out there. There are certainly players out in the NCAA at different levels that play more of unique sports, Olympic sports, that have been able to create the niche for themselves. So I think it's going to continue to spread. Again, it's kind of a new thing as it comes and goes. I mean,
they're still
most of
to
technology
it.
Has been that way. Yeah, most of technology too has been that way of people trying to figure out YouTube and TikTok and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's like,
sure.
Oh, I can monetize that. It's like, well, yeah, probably good.
All right, Jenny. So how do you see the landscape of women's collegiate golf evolving in the coming years? What kind of challenges or opportunities do you see?
You know, golf is such a historical sport. I think from you know, a lot of times from the NCAA, we are a bit at the mercy of the revenue sports and what the Power Five is going to choose to do, especially with the NIL, sorry, what acronym is it?
NIL.
NIL.
Yes, NIL.
And everything else and all of this, our players, our athletes, employees, are they not employees? You know, you're going down some roads that are really going to change a lot of the landscape. And it's lawyers and courtrooms that are going to be doing that more so than coaches and players themselves. You know, the coaches have kind of sat on their hands a little bit in all of this stuff. It's kind of been up to the administrators and the players as you negotiate through. So, you know, I think there could be a lot of changes and there could be far fewer changes than we see potentially here in the future. But I think women's golf itself is healthy. From a professional standpoint, what Nelly Korda is doing right now is amazing. So, and just more highlights and more highlights, you know. As people talk about, you know, we see our players, the more our players are in front of people that don't know women's golf, the more they're amazed by women's golf, especially the athletes that these girls are. You know, like I said, when we go to tournaments, they walk, they carry their own bag, they push their own bag. We play 4 rounds in 48 hours.
Wow.
We play a practice round, we go to bed, we wake up, we play 36 holes, dawn to dusk. Huh? And we go to bed, we wake up, we play another 18, we get on a plane, we go home.
That's aggressive. That really is.
It is.
That's
right?
A tough schedule.
And, you know, I mean, they are very athletic when it comes to that. You know, like I have a great friend who is now a really good football coach. And back in the day, he caddied for me in a tournament. And he was asleep within 3 minutes of the car. He's like, I can't do it. I'm like, you are a running back, sir. So, you know, it's a different kind of athlete, and I think that because of the pace of the sport, it does get that. But, you know, we got girls that are 5'2" on our team and can hit it past most men. Like, so I play from those tee boxes and competitive and good. And so, you know, I think that the sport itself is healthy. I love the support from Augusta with the ANWA that they've got and have put that together. I think women's college golf and team golf is really compelling, especially when we're able to put it on TV from the national championship.
It's all media exposure, isn't it? And then sponsorships come with it. Then the sport itself grows. It's all the exposure and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot there for the future of our sport. We're going to have to ebb and flow and we're going to have to be creative. It's just how it's going to be in the future landscape, though.
How hard is it to go from college golf to make it to LPGA?
That is a loaded question.
Probably don't have enough time in this episode to talk about it, but
no, it's actually a pretty simple answer, to be honest. You know, every player has to have about three qualities. They have to have the intangible of a competitor that never quits. Mm-hmm. They want to be the absolute best. Not aggressively so that they're, you know, unpleasant to be around, but they have to be selfish in their goals. You have to have financial backing. Number two, you've got to have financial backing. And however that comes, however that's concocted, whether it's your family financial backing, you've created sponsors, you know, there's the NIL stuff with kind of being capitalistic for women's college golfers. Like, you have to have an angle and you have to be able to ask people and create that opportunity for yourself. And thirdly, you have to be willing to be a nomad. You don't have a home. You're going to go from hotel to hotel. You travel around the world. So you have to have a really good support base that you're good at being alone, traveling alone, and taking a lot of things independent.
And adapting quickly.
And adapting quickly. Yeah. You got to put yourself out there. You can't be – I mean, you can be shy, but you have to know the opportunity. Like, you're going to have to be with sponsors, and you're going to have to do some of those things because that's what the sport demands. So if you've got those three things, if you're willing to do those three things, then all you need to do is play well at the right time. It's timing. So we've got a former player who's a full-time on the Epson Tour. Her name's Pinata Kuvanen. Her nickname's Bright. She's from Thailand. And
that's
phenomenal
brandable.
Player.
I like that. That's
yes,
a, that's a good...
it's brandable, Bright. And she has had all three. And she has been very close to playing well at the right time. She missed her full tour card, not this cycle, but the cycle before, by like 3 shots.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's she is a great player, and she is a she understands the sponsor responsibilities. She understands so much of those things. It's a matter of being patient enough to grind and grind and grind and just know that your opportunity will fall your way. So that's the competitor piece. You have to know that it's going to come, not will it come or if it comes. Yeah.
So she's a rising star. Tell us about how can fans and sponsors help support women's college golf?
Watching and following along is a big part of it. We've gone through a new system of our rankings and things like that. There's a lot of shift behind the scenes this year in companies, but golfstat.com does a lot of our live scoring. You can go on there right now. The regional championship's happening around. Unfortunately, we're not there. Darn Kent State. But we'll be there in the future. So they do a lot of the live scoring, so you can pull up there, and it is hole by hole, minute by minute that you can see. The Golf Channel broadcasts our national championship at the end of the month, and it is 8 days of golf. It's 8 rounds in 7 days for the national championship.
Intense.
Intense, and it's match play, and it's exciting, and there's a lot going on. As far as Toledo Women's Golf, it's continuing to follow along. We really look for different fundraising opportunities with our team. While we are well supported from the university, there's a lot of other things that go into it. So travel costs and everything else. Cost of doing business is going up.
for us as well as everybody else. You know,
but,
you did make reference to going online and looking at, you know, being able to see different scores and just teams and how people individuals are doing, but that brings to mind technology, advancements in technology. I definitely like in every episode to talk about what's new, what's fresh, what's trending. Can you tell us what's happened in the world of golf?
Oh man, everything all the time, all at once.
So soon the golf ball, something will be on my wrist and it'll show me where my ball's out.
I lost my ball
and I can never find it. So.
Oh man. So one thing that I will say and be vocal about is the USGA and the RNA, so our governing bodies for golf, for the amateur side, are rolling back the golf ball. So they're going to make it go less far, which to me is not the way. It's going to affect people, I think, more than what they realize it's going to. I'm against it 100%. Unfortunately, I have no say, and they didn't ask me, but...
less far? Okay, We're in trouble now.
Right, the ball's going to go shorter, and a lot of that's been driven by how far the men have started to hit it on the PGA Tour. And I think making rules for 1% and that it affects the other 99% in a negative way is not fair. But we'll see how that shakes down as far as technology goes. I know some of my players like, wait, I'm going to hit it 5 yards less. I'm like, unfortunately, that's how it's going to go.
That's really that's mind blowing. It really is.
So, nice. I mean, again, it's like, all right, let's go hit the weight room some more and try to get distance in a different way and figure it out. But anyways, there's always technology in golf. You know, I think some of the smartest people that are in it, we have some good friends at Area 419 and 419 Golf. They are a group of guys that have not a lot of extra time, but engineering brains and addicted to golf, make some great putters. So you've got technology and clubs that come out every single year, new stuff.
Can you locate my lost ball? Can we have a GPS?
I would love that for a lot of people and pace of play. That would be great for pace of play. Yes. But
so it's good scramble.
You know, yeah.
It's good scramble.
It's the ultimate Easter egg hunt, right?
Yes. Even though they make them bright, you know, neon, but for some reason, we still have one person on the team that can't find their ball.
Right.
And you're circling around.
Circling around.
Holding everybody up.
And being vultures, yeah.
Yes. So I guess I really have one final question for you. What advice would you give to a young lady who wants to get into golf? Maybe she's new to it, or even someone who's played golf and really wants to go to the next level. What do you say to them?
So let me start with the beginner, or the young ladies that get into it. Whether it serves you now, it's going to serve you later in life if you know the sport. My girls get invited to things that females don't always get invited to because they can play. So from a business aspect and everything else, like if you're not going to play competitively, learn it as a life skill. It's something that the game needs more women in it, and because then you will be at the table at decision-making time.
So networking, business opportunities,
deals get done on the golf course. That's why Inverness has so much guest play. Deals get done on the golf course. And whether it's, you know, you can caddy, It's just, again, it's a good life skill to be able to have. From a competitive aspect, there's a lot of opportunity at the collegiate level. You don't have to play Division I. You can play other divisions. I mean, I played Division II. I coached NAIA. I played Division III. I've been at all the levels. And at all the levels, there's an opportunity for a great experience. And two, partially get your school paid for, if not all of it. So why not guarantee no debt out of college if you can, if it's a skill set? It is a sport that you can play until your 90s. I've played with women here in Toledo that, you know, crest their 90th birthday, and they're still playing away. So it's just a great lifelong sport, whether you choose it competitively or not. It can serve you in a lot of ways. So that's what I would say from the young girl aspect, and have fun with it. Wear the clothes, buy the clubs. Have the head covers, have the gadgets, you know. I mean, that's the accessorize, however
the
you
part.
Need to.
Look the part, right?
Just... right? Look the part. Have fun with it. Moms and dads, let them have fun with it. And then for the ones that are wanting to go to the next level, find a teacher. Ask for help, right? And it's not the magazines. Every body, physical body, is built differently. And biomechanics do not transfer from person to person. Theories might, but what you actually need is not necessarily going to come to you in a magazine. And I hate to say that from a magazine. They're good ideas. But if you find a good teacher, then they can easily take you to the next step and really filter through probably 10 steps of you getting frustrated to give you the 2 steps that you need to move on to the next stage. So whether you're recreational and just want to shave off a few shots, not be so frustrated off the tee, right?
Yeah.
Sophia, we're
going to get off the tee.
I'm
working on that.
Get off the tee. Or those little bits. But, you know, finding a teacher is going to help you, whether you see him once a month or twice a year, whatever. I get a lesson probably about twice a year from my husband, who's a PGA. I'm his worst student.
Keep it in the family. And he's like, yeah, I can't
coach
you. I'm
his worst student.
I can't coach
you. I'm like, I know. And he's like, well, if you know, then why are you here? I'm like, fair. So,
yeah.
He's
busy.
I mean, even
right?
I need help, right? So I need somebody. I can't look at myself while I do golf swings. Video can only go so much.
But, use it or you lose it, right? You got to keep – it's practicing.
Got to keep riding the bike.
Well, excellent. Well, Jenny, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. And I'm wishing the best at University of Toledo. Young ladies and collegiate athletes here at Toledo are lucky to have you. And I got to tell you, Jenny, you got game.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, it's clear that collegiate golf is a transformative journey for both the athletes and coaches. From recruiting to the impact of initiatives like NC2A Women's Golf Championships, we've explored the dynamic world of women's collegiate golf. With the recent changes in NC2A rules and advancements in technology, the landscape is rapidly evolving. Collegiate golf remains instrumental in developing future stars of women's golf, while also preparing athletes for diverse career paths beyond the professional circuit. To our listeners, support for women's collegiate golf is vital for its growth. Whether you're a seasoned fan or new to the game, embrace the journey and witness the power of dedication and passion in women's golf. Until next time, may your drives be long and your putts be true. Thank you for joining us. Special thanks to Jenny from the University of Toledo Women's Golf Team. And a special thanks to my executive producer, Chris Pfeiffer. And I'm your host and producer, Sophia Fisher. Feel free to visit us at wgte.org/womengotgame.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.